Well, thanks, everyone. Sorry to make you haul everything up here. We want to just make sure that you get your good quality in the questions. We've got no opening statements. We'll just take your questions.
What's the deal with sports gambling?
In the House, it worked its way through several committees, and then it stalled out in state government, and I think that we will pick it back up next year.
Governor, are you going to sign or veto the Uber bill?
We're still looking. There's a few bills still on my desk that we have not signed, and I'm still looking. As you see, we're getting some input from other stakeholders, and I will weigh it out.
Are you weighing other constitutional options, pocket veto, leaving it unsigned? You're looking at that because it differs, right, if the legislature's in session or not?
In these years, there is no pocket veto in the odd years, no.
So we'll make it. So that's not, you're going to sign it?
Make
or
look at it.
Okay.
Governor, you're calling this still a one Minnesota budget, and the lawmakers can chime in on this too. Nearly half the legislature did not vote for this budget. What is your response to those people who feel like they were completely left out?
Don't come to ribbon cuttings, I suppose, for one, because we're going to be fixing a lot of roads. The idea of being left out of it, I've served in the minority. It's not about being left out of it. I'll tell you what left out was, is we simply asked for hearings on guns for 4 years and couldn't get them. We had massive hearings. We had 38 public hearings around cannabis. And so not getting what you want and being left out are two very different things. These were very public hearings. Most of this discussions, and many of you know this, it wasn't the old talk of the triumvirate behind closed doors. It was done by skilled legislators in the public. So I'll let these two talk on this, but I just think, the ideas in public opinion was that we needed to do something around protecting abortion rights. We needed to do something around guns. We needed to make sure our economy is more competitive and making sure that as we see people talking about where do you want to live in places where you're valued for your work. So I just think, and again, I've served there. It's the most frustrating thing, but I think the claim that they were left out is simply not true.
I'll echo what the governor said. I mean, we had committee hearings all throughout session, and on several of these bills, there was input from the Republicans. So, and then they talked about there wasn't negotiations or compromise, and I know the speaker and I were involved in several compromises and negotiations over the entire session. So I think that, we held hearings. We had heard from the people of Minnesota. Several of the bills had Republican amendments put in, and they were part of the discussion. And so I think this is... these bills reflect voices from all across Minnesota and both sides of the aisle.
But Speaker, can it truly be called a one Minnesota budget given the division?
Well, we certainly extended a hand to Republicans and asked them to work in partnership with us, but fundamentally the parties have very different views on many issues right now. There is not a single pro-choice Republican legislator, so I did not expect bipartisanship on that. There are many Republican legislators who don't believe in climate change, so it was very hard to get them to come along with climate action. They don't think that our democracy is under threat. They think that January 6th was some tourist who got lost looking for the gift shop. So we didn't expect them to join with us on those things. And as the governor said, it's a difference between not being happy with the result and truly being left out. We tried to take some of their amendments. When we did, they withdrew their amendments. So I think at a certain point, the Republicans decided that the talking point of this being a Democratic session where they didn't have input was more valuable to them than actually doing the work and providing the input.
The state budget has grown pretty significantly over the last biennium. Governor and leaders, do you think that that level of spending is sustainable in future years?
No, that's why it's one time. And so I think what's been lost in this, and I'm going to have Paul Marquardt come up here. He is obviously knows this better than I, but I'm starting to be convinced he might be a better teacher in explaining this to people. Look, checks going back to people's government spending. Are the Republicans opposed to that spending? Social Security tax cuts is money going back. The child tax credit is money going back. They don't want to count this. The biggest revenue piece in this was aligning with what President Trump did in 2017 on the GILTI tax and making sure that aligns with 22 other states and federal tax policy. So, I still keep saying this, it is going to shrink significantly. So I expect that there will be stories next year. In the second year of the biennium, state government shrunk by 30%. Well, that doesn't tell the whole story either, no more than using it this way, because a lot of it's one time. What do you think, A or B on that? You want to? All right, you've taught me well.
Commissioner, can we ask you a question about the following biennium when expenditures are going to go down and it's unclear how they're going to match up with revenues? either one of you, either commissioner.
I'm sorry, what was
the in the next biennium, the expenditures will go down, but it's unclear how much they're going to match up with revenues. Are you comfortable with the level of revenue that will be coming in, even with all the tax increases?
From the very first day, the governor and leaders has said, we're going to be making sure that we use one-time money responsibly, not creating a cliff, obligations that we can't sustain. This budget was built on that chassis, and you'll see that.
Commissioner Markport, you were around last time that a commissioner and a governor had to deal with the largest tax cut in Minnesota history, Governor Ventura, and the large deficits that followed. That was not fun. It was a $6 billion shortfall, I think, when you were in the legislature. Any chance that's going to happen again?
Well, actually, in 2013, when the fourth tier was added, that's when we started to go into surpluses in 2013. In about my first 12 years in the legislature, we were constantly fighting deficits. And it was finally when we raised the fourth tier from 13 on is when we've actually started to have more surpluses.
Could you give us a quick counterpoint? The narrative in all the press releases we've gotten today and for the last 4 weeks is that you're raising taxes by $10 billion over the next 4 years. Does anybody have a thumbnail on what the actual number is? Is it really $10 billion over?
I can speak to a couple of pieces of it. I think the biggest place where we hear Republicans complaining is in the area of transportation. We have constitutionally dedicated funding that goes to transportation right now. It's the gas tax, motor vehicle sales tax, tab fees. We spend between $4 and $5 billion from those funds every 2 years on our roads and bridges, yet we are deficient in our road repair and our bridge repair. And so what the bill that we passed will do is it will put about $1 billion a year into roads and bridges over the next 4 years. So that is $4 billion over 4 years. What Republicans like to do is kind of squish timelines and pretend that we're talking about time periods of 10 years for our investments, and they're talking about 10 years for the spending. When we talk about budgets at the legislature, we're talking about a year or we're talking about 2 years. And so that's a very reasonable increase to start to meet the unmet needs. And it's only when Democrats are in charge that we make these responsible decisions to take care of the infrastructure that our grandparents built for us in this state.
Is there a number for 2 years and for 4 years for the total? Because it's all split through different bills, which is one of the things that makes it hard to track the taxes and fees.
Anna Mingy from MMB. I don't actually have that, but we can compile that and if folks are interested, or help direct people to the resources.
I have a question for Commissioner Showalter, if you don't mind, Commissioner. The same question that Mary actually asked Commissioner Markhart. My apologies, Commissioner. Everybody's wondering what the Fed is going to do and what's going to happen in terms of the debt ceiling and all those kinds of things, right? If we go into a recession, let's say we go into a mild recession, what are the budget effects? Are we going to see large deficits now coming up that the next legislature or maybe the legislature after that is going to have to deal with? If we go into a serious recession, haven't helped us about a depression, but if we go into a serious recession, what happens next legislative session and the following legislative session in terms of deficits? Have you projected that?
No, but let's just start. The debt ceiling would be one of the greatest self-inflicted wounds of probably history. There is no reason to go there. There is absolutely no reason to get to a deal and continue operations at the federal level. So just let's start with the scenario building. As far as the state's budget, the credit rating agencies acknowledge the state has very solid reserves. Our rainy day funds have been replenished and are larger than they've ever been. We have a structural surplus that we've used. We've built a budget around that sort of long-term horizon. And we're also investing in the things that will make Minnesota strong in the future, helping parents, helping kids, helping people get into the workforce across the board. Those are the questions that I think are really important for the state's financial future, and making sure that we continue to grow and continue to have opportunities for surplus, regardless of what happens at the federal level, the world economic view, is how do we position ourselves? How do we continue that strength?
If we have a recession, Are we going to be in, you know, $10 or $15 billion budget deficit range, or are we going to be in a billion or 2 billion potentially?
No, and I want to start by just thinking about, you know, several years ago where there was kind of like some preliminary numbers with COVID happening, and all of a sudden everyone sort of expected like what's the latest scenario and how could it. We're not going to get into that. Minnesota's got a long-standing tradition of taking solid, long-term look at the economy, what are the effects, and working through that. We'll be doing that in November. Right now, the state is as well-positioned as has been in a long time because of the reserves, because of the long-term outlook, and you know, I think we're well-positioned for whatever comes.
Piggyback off that just a little bit, and maybe the governor could answer this. How closely, I mean, we're a week out from the date that we've been given for potentially defaulting on the national debt. How closely are you guys following that?
Now, yeah, I've spoke about this, and I was just, debt ceiling, very, it's personal to me because I had to learn about this and get there. I was asked, and not all my colleagues did it. There was a number of us to get it over the line because there's people that think they go to Washington, they come here, and they say they're fiscally conservative and they vote against everything, and then they have to raise property tax or somebody else has to pay for it. That's the way it works. President Bush asked me to support the raising of the debt ceiling. I did it. President Obama asked me to support the raising of the debt ceiling, and I did it, even though the entire time I'm voting for responsible spending. I mean, that's the myth in this, that somehow that the Republicans are responsible in budgeting. They create deficits, overspend, give tax cuts, and don't pay for them. President Trump's people came to me. They knew they needed about 20-some Democrats or whatever to help vote for these things, and I said yes, because it's the responsible thing to do. It has nothing to do with politics. So I'm nervous. I was at NGA, the National Governors Association, in January. I was on the floor with my friends, and everybody was puppies and rainbows. Oh, yeah, we'll get this, we'll get this. I have to tell you, John Boehner lost his speakership over the debt ceiling. Paul Ryan lost his speakership over the debt ceiling. And they lost it because they were two responsible leaders who were willing to do the right thing to not tank the economy. Kevin McCarthy does not have that backbone. He does not have that conviction. And he has a worse caucus pushing him on this. So I have been saying since January to our team, and when we fashioned this budget, to think about this. The question being asked is certainly a doomsday scenario thing. Minnesota's economy is more diverse than others. We don't sink as far down. But let's all be very, very honest here. If they default on the debt ceiling, it won't matter what we just did out there, because the catastrophic nature that will ripple through the economy can't be prevented by what one state did or did not do. And I will just add, again, we put $3.1 billion last year responsibly back into the UI Trust Fund, which is fully paid off and fully solvent. Our rainy day funds are at the maximum level that they can be. Our rating is, our credit rating is three-star rated. We created 4,500 jobs in April, and we had the highest amount of exports last year. We're well positioned. I don't quite know and don't understand, especially on transportation funding, every single one of those dollars is going to go in to buy equipment, pay salaries, increase time on the road that you're not in idling and you're not hurting this. I'm being a bit facetious on this. You do not get to come to ribbon cuttings for massive projects in the first time in a generation we're finally catching up on this when you did not support these things. You did not have that. You go home and tell people that we raised taxes. When you notice the 3 cents go up at your local store over the next 2 years, text into me and let me know when you saw that. It was directly tied to the tax cut. Because, or the tax increase, because the speaker said it so well. This is dedicated funding that goes to a cause. And what we know is, I'm going to say this until you guys print it or run it, we have the fourth highest amount of road miles in the country. Per capita wise, it's not even close. We're in the nature with California, Texas, and Illinois. We have to pay for our roads. These folks just don't want to pay for anything. They never want to do it. They don't want to tell you how they're going to do it. But they fought tooth and nail for a tax cut for the wealthiest Minnesotans, but they didn't want to fix the roads.
I'd like to vote.
Thank you.
The what?
The fourth most mile.
You printed it.
You did?
Yeah.
I stand corrected. Okay. Thank you.
Now you have to answer my question.
Now I'm all happy. All right.
Now okay. You have to answer my question. Have you been presented all of the budget bills and the capital budget?
Not yet.
So have you signed them?
No, I still have bonding, capital budget. We still have both those. We still have the worker protection rights. And just to be clear on this, the issue on that is not a discussion about if folks need to be taken care of. We are very obviously care about that. Everything we've done in this budget did that. I think it's understanding something so new to try and the bonding bill.
To hold this, the Minnesota Miracle 2.0, you've been talking about Governor Wendell Anderson.
I don't think you were in the state at that point. So tell us, you know, kind of the history lesson and that, you know, 50 years ago history.
No, this first lady was still here. She talks about this. And I just have to tell you from my perspective, I think he's gone now. There's a cameraman with a Nebraska National Champion shirt, 94. I thought he was trolling me out there today. I wasn't quite sure. As you know, I'm a Nebraskan. I grew up in Nebraska. I was proud of that in the schools. But I have to tell you, as a young teacher, certainly my wife was from Minnesota, but we started looking where we would like to be. Minnesota looked like a golden city on the hill, a beacon. It paid 27% more than what I was making in Nebraska. And the funding per pupil was about 30% more to each student. And so when I think about that, and I think that equates back to the Minnesota miracle, this commitment to education, I know for my family, it attracted me and my wife as teachers, and it certainly makes us proud to send our kids to public school, which we've done. So I think it makes a difference. And some of you have heard me say this, and we did not get there. This team is super talented. We did not get there in its entirety, but we went a long ways to shifting back to education being fair across the state, not being totally dependent on these referendums and property taxes. They did a heck of a job to get there. And I think this is where we can make the biggest impact.
Are people going to work here? Can you measure it? Will there be measurables and special demographics? You're trying to get people here. People have left.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, maybe. You're going to, yeah. Provide me the data on that. You know who's leaving in the highest numbers? 18 to 29-year-olds. And they're mostly leaving greater Minnesota. We believe that the investments we've made across the state into greater Minnesota, into education, into broadband, into things that can, sustainable aviation fuel. This one's getting missed in this. We are going to be the global hub of sustainable aviation fuel when we move towards that because they can't use batteries right now. We're hearing from the French ambassador to the United States came to Minnesota to look at what we're going to do around that. So, yeah, I think... you're going to start to see it. You're going to start to feel it. You're going to start to say, this is a place to live. And I think we already saw it. I just saw yesterday. Can't even have a Pride Festival in Fargo anymore. They're going to move it over to Moorhead where it's safe. Don't think that discussion isn't going to happen more. Don't think that people aren't going to be thinking, where can I do this? If you're graduating from med school in your OBGYN, good luck in Idaho. We just had a young woman and her mother arrested in Nebraska for trying to receive an abortion with absolutely no knowledge of what their doctor said. So yeah, we are making the case on this. We have Amanda Gorman's poem that was read at President Biden's inauguration being banned from Florida schools. So yeah, I'm making the case on this, that we're gonna build an economy that's stronger, that's more caring, that is more inclusive. And if businesses are already way ahead on this, this is the place to be.
I have a clarification on Peter's question. So are there other, besides bonding and Uber, are there other bills POT you haven't signed yet, right, Governor? Are there other bills you haven't signed, or paid leave maybe?
You can pull that on there.
Are there other bills that you haven't signed that you're undecided on, I guess I should ask?
Still looking at them all, and each one of them, the way this works, I'll just give you a behind-the-scenes thing. Yeah. We have policy experts. We have Leah Montgomery, who's our lead on this. She is very adamant about this. All the discussions happen. The bills are there. They prevent a slideshow to me in the briefs from her policy people of the pros and cons and then the recommendation from the team. And we go through each one of those before we do a bill.
And you did not line item veto anything from the bills that you have signed already.
I have not.
Okay.
I have
Governor,
not.
Will you sign the Fairview?
Leader Zizek. I have a question for Leader Zizek. We heard all session that you weren't going to be able to hold these 34 votes together. How difficult was that, and why do you think it happened?
Yeah.
I said, I don't know her very well.
Yeah. So. I always said, I didn't have a crystal ball. And, you know, we had those conversations, and we were just going to keep talking to each other, and that's what we did all session long. We just hung together and had very blunt and honest conversations. Again, we, you know, have people that represent those small rural communities, a variety of different suburban communities that all look differently, and then the urban core. And so, you know, we just needed to talk about what was important to our communities, and we found out in those conversations we had a lot more in common than we did differences, but when there were differences, we just worked them out. So it was a lot of long, long conversations, and I think we had fun doing it.
Governor, tomorrow's the anniversary of George Floyd's death. I know it's been almost 2 years since the DOJ announced that they were doing their own investigation into MPD. Has your administration heard anything on the timeline, and if we can?
No, and this is where I need my attorneys, my Chief of Staff Chris Minter talked to me about this. He clerked in a federal judge's office, so I learned a little something about that. They are super
super quiet about that. They don't share anything, because we actually made the point, not trying to interfere, but said, was there simultaneous data that was being gathered by the Minnesota Department of Human Rights that would help or whatever? And they don't, they just don't do that. I don't think I'm mischaracterizing that. It's their own investigation. We don't hear on that, and that's the way it is. We'll get together again here soon. I know you're all looking forward to this. We have a cannabis signing that will be coming that Teddy should be interesting, is all I can say. So we'll get her done. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks.